Before we start our episode on granuloma annulare, there's a few housekeeping items I want to go over. So number one, we are proud to announce that we have released our first YouTube episode using audio from the GrenZone podcast. It is chock full of Kodachromes graciously provided by DermNet, other helpful visuals, and even a bonus Picmonic-style image to remember the episode content. So please do us a favor and search GrenZone on YouTube, subscribe, and please provide feedback in the comments that we can incorporate for creating future episodes on YouTube. And also, don't be afraid to give a shout out to the team of students and residents at the end of the video for all of their hard work. They definitely deserve it. Secondly, as we enter our fifth year of creating content, I have had several listeners ask for ways to financially support the podcast. So, we created a donation link on our website at grenzonederm.com, which includes links to our PayPal account, Pearl Podcasting LLC, and also for Venmo at Pearl Podcasting. We've accumulated some pretty significant expenses in recent years once you add them all up, so any donation is sincerely appreciated. And you have my word that these donations will only be used to cover our expenses to help us continue making new content moving forward. I'll even give a shout out on future episodes for the most generous donations, so please comment with your name and any shout outs you want us to give on your behalf. Okay, so let's move on with granuloma annulare. For this next episode, I'm going to step back and let my great friend and former co-resident, Dr. Courtney Burnett, go beyond her role as the voice of Dr. Binky and take the reins as host. Dr. Burnett is one of the smartest people I know, and also happens to be one of the sweetest people I know. I felt very lucky to spend 3 years in residency learning alongside her, and we are all very lucky to have her share her knowledge with us here in the GrenZone.
Welcome to the GrenZone, dissecting dermatology differently. Here is your host, Dr. Logan Kolb.
Hey guys, welcome back to the GrenZone. I'm your host, Logan Kolb. Just kidding, it's Dr. Binky. Surprise, I'll be your host today. In today's episode, we will be covering a relatively common condition called granuloma annulare. Although the majority of patients with granuloma annulare, also known as GA, are healthy, there are some subtypes of GA that are associated with more severe underlying systemic disorders, so it's important to know which subtypes of GA need a further workup. As Logan covered in the last episode, the dermal reaction pattern is broken down into five subcategories. First, the dermal depositional disorders, which Logan covered in the previous episode. Second, the inflammatory dermal disorders, which are even farther subcategorized based on what type of cell is causing the inflammation, like lymphocytes, histiocytes, mast cells, neutrophils, or eosinophils. The third subcategory in the dermal reaction pattern are infectious conditions, such as sporotrichosis and deep fungal infections. In the fourth category, we have the dermal proliferative category, which contains a group of benign and malignant tumors that can develop from blood vessels, hair follicles, sweat glands, nerve, and muscle. In the fifth and final subcategory, we have the subcutaneous disorders such as paniculitis and lipomas. Of course, before we really dive into this, we can't forget to mention our disclaimer. This episode is meant for educational and informational purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Nor does it represent the views of Orange Park Medical Center, Olmsted Medical Center, or their affiliates. Before we really start to talk about granuloma annulare, let's start with a little pre-episode quiz.
Excuse me, my bowels did not agree with the cuisine that I consumed last evening, which is making me extra, extra grumpy. But here we go. Question number one. What is the most common location for granuloma annulare lesions? Now, we are just getting warmed up. How about question number two? What type of underlying conditions are associated with generalized granuloma annulare? And lastly, whom is it that usually develops subcutaneous granuloma annulare, and what is the most common location?
Okay, guys, over the next three episodes, our attention is going to be directed towards the dermal inflammatory disorders, specifically inflammatory disorders caused by histiocytes. A few episodes back, Logan briefly covered a bit of background information about these complicated cells, so let's test your memory.
Is anyone able to name the three different types of histiocytes?
The three different types of histiocytes include Langerhans cells, mononuclear cells, also known as macrophages, and dermal dendritic cells. The Langerhans cell's main function is to be an excellent antigen-presenting cell. They mainly hang out in the stratosplenosum, prowling for antigens, and are capable of carrying those antigens out to our lymph nodes, where it can present to our T lymphocytes.
Now, I don't imagine any one of you can tell me what a Langerhans cell actually looks like on hematoxylin and eosin staining.
Okay, so this may have kind of been a mean question, but you can't actually see a Langerhans cell on routine H&E staining. But there are certain stains such as Langerin, also known as CD207, CD1A, and S100, that can highlight these cells. The next type of histiocyte, the macrophage, often referred to as the true histiocyte, lives in the dermis, and its main function is to be a highly phagocytic and mediocre antigen presenter. Lastly, we have our dermal dendritic cells, which are farther divided into type 1 and type 2 dermal dendritic cells. Type 1 dermal dendritic cells hang out in the papillary dermis and stain positive for factor 13A. While type 2 dermal dendritic cells live deeper in the reticular dermis and stain positive for CD34. Okay, enough basic science. Let's get on to the fun stuff. Now for the main event. Let's finally dive into granuloma annulare. Granuloma annulare is a common condition that is most frequently seen in a younger age demographic, with about two-thirds of patients being diagnosed before age 30. Females are twice as likely to be diagnosed with granuloma annulare in comparison to males. Like many other diagnoses in dermatology, granuloma annulare is another one of those conditions where you can't give the patient a straightforward explanation of what caused this rash to appear, which can sometimes be really frustrating for both the clinician and the patient. What we do know about GA, though, is that it's generally thought to be a result of a delayed Th1 hypersensitivity reaction to some type of triggering event. As you can imagine, the list of triggering events is quite large, including insect bites, or as Dr. Grumpy Pants would say, arthropod assault, underlying infections such as viral infections, mycobacterial infections, or borrelial infections, vaccinations, trauma, or UV radiation exposure, and tuberculin skin testing. Clinically, classic granuloma annulare presents as annular or arcuate violaceous plaques, which are actually made up of numerous smaller violaceous papules that eventually coalesce together. These papules are sometimes difficult to see, but if you look closely at the plaques, you can usually make them out. Sometimes as the plaque expands, the central portion of the lesion can actually develop a brawny discoloration, which has an atrophic look to it. As a reminder, since GA is a dermal disorder, we would not expect to see any secondary skin changes, such as scale formation, over top of these lesions. The most common distribution for classic granuloma annulare lesions is on the dorsal hands, forearms, and elbows, and this distribution accounts for about 60% of cases. The next most common location, accounting for the distribution in about 20% of cases, includes the dorsal feet and ankles. So if you can remember the distal portions of both the upper and the lower extremities, you'll already have 80% of GA locations memorized. Granuloma annulare typically does not involve the facial skin. As we mentioned earlier, there are a few granuloma annulare subtypes, some of which have underlying systemic associations. No pressure, but can you try to name some of the subtypes or variants of granuloma annulare? All right, so the different variants of granuloma annulare include patch type GA, subcutaneous GA, generalized or disseminated GA, and perforating GA. Patch type GA, also known as macular GA, as the name alludes to, presents as a non-palpable, erythematous to violaceous patch, which often looks similar to a bruise, and the most common location is on the dorsal feet. Subcutaneous GA, also known as pseudo-rheumatoid nodule, is most commonly seen in preschool and kindergarten-aged children, so kids less than 6 years old, and is frequently associated with preceding physical trauma. Clinically, it presents as an asymptomatic subcutaneous nodule, similar to a rheumatoid nodule. By far, the most common location for subcutaneous GA is the dorsal foot, but other sites can include the palms, shins, buttock, and scalp. Since these lesions are completely subcutaneous, a punch biopsy is usually required in order to make this diagnosis. Complete physical examination of the patient can be helpful if you're suspecting subcutaneous GA, because about 50% of patients will have classic granuloma annulare lesions elsewhere. In comparison, generalized granuloma annulare typically presents in middle-aged adults in their 40s and 50s. Clinically, generalized GA presents with red to violaceous papules that coalesce into hundreds to thousands of symmetrically distributed small annular plaques. Although we often think of generalized GA as a more diffuse rash, the actual definition of generalized GA is greater than 10 lesions in at least 3 different anatomical locations. When the diagnosis of generalized GA is made in a patient, a workup for underlying systemic disorders such as hyperlipidemia, type 1 diabetes, thyroid disease, HIV, and malignancy must be considered.
Okay, here's a question that none of you are going to be able to answer correctly. And I mean none of you. But you all should be able to. Unlike other types of granuloma annulare, generalized granuloma annulare is associated with an HLA subtype. Can anyone tell me which one?
Okay, great. So the HLA subtype associated with generalized GA is HLA-BW35. Interestingly, this HLA haplotype is also associated with subacute granulomatous thyroiditis and adult onset Still's disease. Generalized GA typically resolves on its own within about 3 to 4 years after onset, but unfortunately tends to be very recalcitrant to treatment. One of the least common GA variants is perforating GA, which typically presents on the dorsal hands and fingers. It presents similarly to classic GA, but on close examination, keratotic plugs or ulceration may be noted, and this corresponds to the attempted transepidermal elimination of degenerated collagen fibers. Another rare subtype of GA, photodistributed GA, appears to be more associated with underlying HIV infection. An important concept to always keep in the back of your mind when evaluating GA patients is that in some cases, GA can actually be a paraneoplastic reaction to an underlying malignancy, typically Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, solid organ tumors, or mycosis fungoides. Of course, this won't apply to every patient you diagnose with GA, but there are some key warning signs, such as atypical locations of granuloma annulare lesions or painful GA lesions, such as painful GA lesions on the palms and soles. In one recent article published in the JAD in 2018, a small retrospective chart review of 7 patients with known paraneoplastic GA was analyzed. They found that these cases of paraneoplastic GA generally were cases of generalized GA involving both the trunk and extremities, and the disease was refractory to multiple lines of treatment. The most common malignancy in this subset of patients was lung cancer, followed by blood dyscrasias. The onset of granuloma annulare preceded the diagnosis of the malignancy by about 18 months in this subset of patients. Other authors have also analyzed this long-debated association and found no specific correlation between the presence of granuloma annulare and malignant neoplasms, but most agree that GA in atypical locations or painful GA should raise concern for a possible paraneoplastic entity. Drug-induced granuloma annulare is likely under-recognized, but a careful drug history should be obtained from all new-onset granuloma annulare patients. Here comes another question. Does anyone know the most common drug culprit for granuloma annulare? The most common drug culprit for drug-induced granuloma annulare is TNF-alpha inhibitors. But other drugs such as amlodipine, allopurinol, GOLD, ACE inhibitors, diclizumab, and diclofenac have also been implicated in causing GA. All right, time to talk about pathology.
Since we are dermatologists, we are in charge of mastering all the science associated with this grand organ that we call the skin. When presented with an ailment, I always attempt to trace the signs and symptoms down to the molecular cause. I visualize how the molecular process formulates the appearance of the disease on histologic examination, and how the histologic appearance correlates with the clinical presentation, and lastly, how knowledge of this entire process will lead to a successful targeted treatment. Now, in keeping with that spirit, describe the histological findings that you would expect with granuloma annulare.
Some of the classic findings that you would expect to see on a slide of granuloma annulare include lymphohistiocytic infiltrate in either a palisading or interstitial pattern, degeneration of collagen and elastic fibers, and mucin deposition. The interstitial pattern is characterized by histiocytes splayed between collagen bundles and is just slightly more common than the palisaded pattern. The palisaded pattern stands out much more microscopically and is characterized by palisaded histiocytes surrounding degenerated collagen and elastic fibers with central mucin deposition. In residency, I always thought that palisaded GA under the microscope looked similar to the classic GA lesions that you would expect to see clinically. Interestingly, an inflammatory cell infiltrate perivascularly is more frequently seen in cases of paraneoplastic GA. So if you have an older patient with an atypical presentation of GA, it may be worth asking your pathologist to take a second look at the slides to see if this is present. If the pathologist would see concomitant LCV or granulomatous vasculitis, this could also raise concern for an underlying systemic disease associated with granuloma annulare. Now that we're all experts on the subtypes and presentation of granuloma annulare, let's talk about how we can help our patients get rid of this condition. Just remember, when a disease has many different treatment options, that generally means there really isn't one great guaranteed treatment that's going to cure the patient's disease. And this is definitely the case with granuloma annulare, so this is something we should discuss up front with our patients. A good spiel of reassurance can definitely go a long way with GA patients, since about 50% of the patients will experience resolution of their condition within 2 years of diagnosis, even if they have no treatment. For localized lesions, treatment with high-potency topical steroids or intralesional steroid injections represent the first-line treatments. For some lucky patients, biopsy or trauma to the skin, such as with intralesional triamcinolone injections, can actually stimulate resolution of their GA. For patients with more widespread disease, such as generalized granuloma annulare, systemic medications are generally utilized due to the obvious difficulties with using topical steroids in these cases. The first-line therapy for generalized granuloma annulare is typically antimalarial drugs, usually hydroxychloroquine. Other options include phototherapy with narrowband UVB, excimer laser, or PUVA. Other systemic therapies reported to be efficacious in granuloma annulare include TNF-alpha inhibitors, which don't forget can actually cause GA in some cases, isotretinoin, pentoxifilin, and ROM therapy. ROM therapy is pulsed monthly dosing of rifampin, ofloxacin, and minocycline. The thought process behind the use of ROM is that in some patients, GA is thought to be the result of an underlying infectious etiology and in some cases can clinically and histologically mimic Posse bacillary leprosy. For patients who desire a more natural or holistic approach to therapy, vitamin E supplementation in doses of 400 to 600 international units daily, or niacinamide 500 milligrams three times daily, may have some therapeutic benefit. All right, we've covered a ton of super high-yield material in today's episode, so let's just recap quickly to cover some of the most important takeaway points. Granuloma annulare typically develops in our younger patient demographic, typically in patients 30 years of age or younger. It's generally regarded as a delayed Th1 hypersensitivity response to some type of inciting event. The most common location is the arms and hands, followed by the dorsal feet and ankles. There are multiple subtypes of granuloma annulare, including patch type GA, subcutaneous GA, generalized or disseminated GA, and perforating GA. The generalized or disseminated variant is the type most commonly associated with underlying systemic disease, including diabetes, hyperlipidemia, thyroid disease, or underlying infections such as HIV or hepatitis. In patients with an atypical presentation of GA, such as GA in just atypical locations or painful GA, a paraneoplastic presentation of granuloma annulare should be considered and appropriate malignancy screenings performed. Drug-induced cases of granuloma annulare should be excluded in all patients with new onset GA. First-line treatment for localized GA include topical and intralesional corticosteroids, while diffuse or generalized GA is typically initially treated with hydroxychloroquine or phototherapy.
All right, thanks for joining today. I want to thank Dr. Sean for his help with the content and Dr. K for not only adding clinical pearls, but supporting this podcast from the get-go. I also want to thank Garrett and Dan for their work with editing and post-production, along with our excellent team of students and residents with Dave, Dan, and Sandra, who put together an awesome study guide for each episode that's available at www.grenzonederm.com. And that's with two Z's, grenzonederm.com. If you have any feedback on how we can improve our content, you can contact us through our website or via email at grenzonederm@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media for more helpful mnemonics and quiz questions. Thanks again for listening today. I'm Logan Kolb, and we'll see you next time here in the Gren Zone.
This episode is copyright 2024 Pearl Podcasting LLC, all rights reserved. The Gren Zone podcast is a service provided by Pearl Podcasting LLC and is not affiliated with any other service providers.